up on the social hour, Guy Kawasaki joins us to rail against those idiots who say Google Plus is a ghost town. Plus, he's got a new book out. Also, Twitter and Facebook aren't very big news sources after all. Or are they? Secrets of tagging and a Pinterest-Instagram mashup. Next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 52, recorded Monday, March 19th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in tropical Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We've been having summer-like weather. It's very strange, very nice, but a little bit odd this time of year.
Amber, I feel like since we started doing The Social Hour, you and I have talked about how the weather is so weird quite a bit.
Yes, we have.
Like we're like flip-flopping in terrain.
It's just very bizarre, Sarah. I know. You know, I like it in the sense that everybody is out. People are wearing shorts, believe it or not. But at the same time, I keep thinking, maybe this is not such a good thing. Hey, got to enjoy it, I suppose, for now.
Virgil says in our chat room, it's patio weather here in Toronto. Patio weather is good.
That is true. Speaking of patio weather, we have an honorary Canadian on the line, so we should probably bring him in.
If you're wondering who that strange man laughing is, why, it's Guy Kawasaki.
Hi.
You know
why it's patio weather in Toronto? It's because your hockey season is almost over.
It's true. Yes, it's coming to an end.
Although the Sharks aren't exactly kicking ass either, but whatever.
The honorary Canadian hockey.
You were making hockey references before the show, and I had to say, what are you talking about? I don't understand the joke.
You mean the Petaluma Ducks aren't doing well this year?
No, they didn't do so well this year. We'll get them next time.
Petaluma Pigeons, maybe.
Oh, no.
I think Petaluma Chickens would probably be the most appropriate mascot.
Ah.
Yeah.
You know, we believe it or not, we raise chickens at our house.
Do you?
Yeah, cool. We have two hens. Anytime you want farm fresh eggs, let me know.
Wow, that is really neat.
Okay, yeah, I'll take them. Love farm fresh eggs. That's country living, Guy, in the valley. Who knew?
You know, back to my roots.
That is very cool. So, Guy, you have been busy as usual, and I was a little surprised a couple of weeks ago to get a link to yet another book from you, because I think I remember when we had you on during Enchantment, you said it would be a while before you were about to write something else, and you just got sucked into the Google Plus world and had to share it with everyone.
I did. Really, you know, I had no plans of writing this Google Plus book, because I write a book every 2 or 3 years, but I really... You know, I just fell in love with Google Plus, and then I got so irritated that all these experts were saying Google Plus was a ghost town, and so it was offended. It was offending to me in the same way that I was offended when people were denigrating Macintosh, you know, back in the 80s. And so basically it pissed me off so much I decided to write a book about how to use Google Plus well so that people wouldn't think it's a ghost town, having read some idiot's analysis of it being a ghost town.
All right. Okay. So you – and I noticed that you had linked to something on your Google Plus profile that's on this exact topic. And your stance is people say it's a ghost town and they're wrong. So what is going on? I mean –
What happened to your fingers, Sarah? Well, before I –
we have to address this before we move on.
We might have to, sir.
I was bitten by a cat.
I thought you had carpal finger, but okay.
No, yeah, somebody in chat was like, does she have iPad finger? It actually makes it very difficult to use the iPad with my right hand. Thank goodness I'm a southpaw. But yes, that's what happened.
You need to stick a stylus in it.
Oh, boy. I need to make it work for me. Yeah, It's the dumbest thing in the world. Really what happened.
You look like that Leonardo da Vinci painting where, you know, God is touching man or
white. Oh boy.
I feel that way. I'm glad you mentioned it, because that's exactly how I feel.
Well, he was naked, though.
Well, I have a ways to go. This is it. This is our creative, artistic representation.
Okay.
It's my version. But
so now, what did you ask again?
I forget. I said, okay, so you are sitting here saying, I love Google Plus. I use Google Plus. Lots of other people do. And there are idiots out there who are saying it's a ghost town. So why do people keep saying that if they're wrong?
I think they're saying that because they don't understand that Google Plus is unlike Facebook and Twitter. And so, you know, I think that Facebook is for your existing friends and family, and you want to know when they had children, had sex, had chickens, whatever. Twitter is for basically news. So if you want to know that there was an earthquake in Chile and you want tweets from somebody who's at ground zero, it's Twitter. But Google Plus is for passions. It's for a new set of friends. So in my case, my friends and family on Facebook, they're not into photography. They're not into hockey. On the other hand, I go to Google Plus and I have an entire different circle of new acquaintances that are into hockey and photography. So if you approach Google Plus as a place to pursue your passions, as opposed to, you know, hanging out with your old family and friends, then it's the place to be.
Amber, what do you think? Because I have talked about this at length, whether or not Google Plus is, you know, here to stay, or if they're losing folks, if the engagement numbers are inflated. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I like it. I mean, I think it's a platform. I've said this many times before. I love it. I love what I'm able to do there. It's really easy. Sharing experience is great. You know, being able to put photos out there. Everything looks really good and works really well. I find it, for me personally, it's just been a matter of kind of fitting it into my routine of updating all of these other sites. I'd be curious, Guy, in terms of your recommendation to, you know, some of us maybe feel, oh, do we have room for yet another social place online? How do you fit this in?
Well, I hate to tell you, but my Twitter presence is basically contributors and ghosts. My Facebook presence is because I cross post from Google Plus to Facebook. So 99% of my social media efforts is Google Plus, basically. Everything on Google Plus is me personally, manual. Everything on Twitter is contributors and automated, and everything on Facebook is basically automated. So Google Plus equals me today.
So if you send your post from Google Plus to Facebook, do you find that there's two different conversations going on based on whether it's a thread that was you know, your Google Plus family or the Facebook folks?
Well, I mean, this kind of leads to why I love Google Plus so much, is that I find that there's very little engagement on Facebook. And so I get many more comments, higher quality on Google Plus. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now I only pay attention to Google Plus. So I only get attention on Google Plus. And then I kind of neglect Twitter and Facebook. So I admire people. If you can keep up three services, hallelujah, but I can't. And Google Plus is all consuming for me. To use a computer analogy, once I got a Macintosh, I stopped using Apple II. You know, what can I say?
Guy, what about the mobile experience for Google Plus? Because I've been using, like you mentioned, I'm on Android now, like you are. Mm-hmm. I feel as that the app is not great. The official Google Plus app. I don't know if it's just me, but I find it a little limiting.
Well, I think it's a little limiting also. Of course, it's still better than the iOS version of the Google app. But you know what's changed? The mobile app for me is, and I was, you know, disclosure, I have been compensated by Samsung. But Samsung sent me a Note, the sort of biggish telephone.
The phablet.
Yeah, the phablet. And it has a stylus. So what I love about it is you can take a picture and then you can scribble stuff and then you can share it directly to Google Plus. And that's very useful if you want to share photos on Google Plus. So the Galaxy Note has kind of changed my mobile experience of Google Plus.
It seems like the folks who take the time to engage on Google Plus, to build up a following, a community, spend a lot of time commenting there, get a lot out of it. It's not as if people say, "Oh, I've put so much time into Google Plus, and it's just it's not for me." But, and there are sort of rumors. Amber and I were doing the social hour last week when the news broke that Kevin Rose and his milk team were, a few of them anyway, were going to Google. And we sort of speculated, well, you know, they're app builders and they're being acquired by Google to do social stuff. I mean, could this be sort of a, you know, an app angle that they could be working on something to make Google Plus more friendly for the Android folks, or maybe it's more of a internet celebrity type of a thing? I mean, is that, what do you think Google Plus needs in order to get people to give it a shot? Because it seems like once people are there, you know, they like it.
You know what Google Plus needs is a good book written about how to use it well.
What a coincidence.
Thank you for that segue.
Had such a thing.
I know. As Steve Jobs would say, there must be a better book.
So we should talk about your book for a little bit. I have a bunch of questions actually about the book in terms of, you know, why you decided to, you know, go for the electronic book, because I know in the past you've done sort of typical business hardcover books.
Yes, yes.
Just talk a little bit, you know, you said that you thought there was a need for it, but as far as distribution, you know, who is this book for?
Okay, well, the book is for anybody with $3 because it costs less than a Starbucks grande latte, at least in the U.S. anyway. So let me tell you about the ebook process. This is the first ebook that I did and self-published. Mm-hmm. So some data points for you. First of all, it's $3. It's $2.99, and I get to keep two of the $3, which is, you know, 70% commission or 70-cent royalty. 70% royalty is amazing compared to, you know, the 10 or 15% you get on a hardcover book through a New York publisher. From the time I turned it in to the copy editor to the time it was available on Kindle was roughly 12 days. So the copy editor took about 3 or 4 days to copy edit. I took a day to approve the copy edits, and then it took about 4 or 5 more days to get it onto Kindle, iBooks, and finally Google Play. So that's remarkable. But what I like most is that I have total flexibility. So believe it or not, I have given away it's a complex question. Samsung has sponsored the book. So via Samsung, I have given away about 5,000 copies. So 5,000 people have downloaded the PDF for free. It's a very interesting thing because, you know, at first I thought, well, any New York publisher would tell you, Guy, you're crazy. You've just cannibalized sales. Why would people buy it if they can get it for free? But I've noticed that the more I give away, the more I sell. So you know, I'll just, my calculation is if Vic Gundrota is right and there's 100 million people using Google Plus, I will give away the first 1 million copies and then I'll sell the next 99 million copies. You know, that would work for me. So
well, it sounds a lot like the, you know, some of the folks in the music industry model that people sampling music leads to more music sales. So
yeah,
it's a little bit of the same model going on.
Well, except they don't give away the whole album. I've given away the whole book. So the ebook experience has been wonderful. I did something where I posted a message to my closest 1.1 million friends on Google Plus, and I asked people to volunteer to copy edit and proof it. And so about 250 people agreed. I sent them all the manuscript, which, again, a New York publisher would go berserk to think that 250 people got the Word document that was the manuscript. And then about 100 people actually sent the manuscript back with copy edits. And they found hundreds of mistakes and had a good 2 or 3 dozen very good suggestions. So I crowdsourced copy editing too. And so that was cool enough. But then I figured out something. I wish I could tell you I was so smart I knew this in advance. So the next level of goodness of doing that was that, guess what? On the day it was available on Kindle, I told Amazon, listen, I can tell 100 people to go write a review. I don't want you to think I'm stacking the deck or I'm cheating because I'm having all these identities. These are real people who read the book. So if you see a bunch of reviews show up immediately, it's not me cheating. And Amazon said, okay, you know, we'll watch this for you. And so I sent out an email to all 100 people saying, or actually to all 250, I said, listen, you've read the book, obviously. You have the book, so go review it on Kindle. And so now if you look at Kindle or you look at Amazon, you'll see that I have about, I think, what is it, 50-something reviews. And of the 50-something, 48 are, how many are, you got it there. There's 56 reviews, right? And 53 are 5-star and 3 are 4-star. You know, the trend is my friend, man.
Those are good numbers.
That is phenomenal. So is it, I mean, are you feeling that, you know, I know we want to talk about the book, but I'm also curious about the publishing process. Are you sort of excited about this in the sense that you would do another book like this?
Listen, if a New York publisher called me up and said, here's $1 million to write a book on paper, you know, I would do it. But as far as everything else about the process, you know, you find a cover designer, you find your copy editor, you find someone to take it from Word to InDesign. I've had to rev the book 3 times because I left people out of the acknowledgments, or I attributed the photo to the wrong person. And so I send an email to my man, you know, Sean, and Sean spits out EPUB, Mobi, and PDF. An hour later, we upload it to Kindle, and we upload it to iBooks, and we upload it to Google Play, and boom, the new version's in. I mean, there's so many advantages, but the greatest advantage really for me was that I can cut deals with Samsung, and I can cut deals with a lot of people saying, you're buying a license to give it away. Amber, can you imagine a conversation where you called up your New York publisher and said, well, you know, Samsung wants the electronic rights to 5,000 copies. Let's cut them a deal. They would tell, you know what they would tell you? They would tell you, tell them to go buy it from Amazon. I mean, it's not possible for them to wrap their minds around this.
I think it sounds like, Guy, you're obviously not new to the book writing process. You have quite a few books under your belt. Yeah. In fact, if you just search Audible, for example, you know, we can listen to audio versions of your books. But you know how the publishing process works. So if you were telling me the ebook process is not only a lot simpler, but you can make revisions and you can get the word out, and it's so much easier for people to buy a copy or get a copy, it speaks volumes for the way that the industry is going.
But, you know, Sarah, here's the catch, okay? So if you publish your own ebook, you have to come to grips with the fact that you have to be an entrepreneur and you have to be a marketer. Because now you don't have a publicist who's sending it out to a bunch of people to get reviewed. You don't have a publicist to do all this kind of stuff. Not that they did that much. I had a great team at Penguin, okay, and Portfolio. But now there's not that team. So it's very fortunate for me that I have, you know, 1.5 million followers on Google Plus and 600,000 on Twitter and 100,000 on Facebook. I don't know if I were Joe Blow writing the Joe Blow way for the first time as an ebook, you know, how would Joe Blow get the word out? Of course, you know, arguably the New York publisher wouldn't publish the Joe Blow way anyway. So, you know, but I don't want people to think it's a, you know, a cure-all for everything. You have to make the calculation that now you are the good news is you are the master of your own fate. The bad news is you're the master of your own fate.
I mean, I guess too, especially with this type of book, there's so many advantages because of technology changing so quickly. That's another option, you know, to be able to update the book. You wouldn't really have that opportunity if it was written in hardcover, say, for example, which brings me to my next question as far as the audience for this book, because you're known for writing a lot of books that are business books. Is this book for someone who maybe is trying to build up their brand on Google Plus, or is it for the average user? Can you differentiate between those two?
Like I said, Amber, it's for somebody with $3. I mean, that's the marketing position. No, you know, Chris Brogan wrote a book about Google Plus for business. My theory on a business using social media very well is that the brand should act like a person. And so this 90% of this book is about how to be very effective as a person on Google Plus, about how to find stuff to post, how to comment, how to respond to comments, how to share photos. All of that's in there. All of that applies to whether you're, you know, Amber or Sarah or Guy or Starbucks or Comcast or Ford or Virgin America. I think if you make a dichotomy that if you're Virgin America or Ford or Comcast, you have to act in this certain hoity-toity legal way. But if you're Amber or Guy or Sarah, you can act in a more personal, engaging way. I think that's a mistake, that brands should act like people on social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I don't know if there's examples of on Google Plus of a brand who is doing a good job of that. Can you think of anyone? Any company, well, I should say?
Most of those popular brands have several hundred thousand followers. I think one of the big limitations right now with a brand being on Google Plus is that a brand cannot circle a person unless the person circles them first, right?
Yes.
And so that's kind of a limitation.
But it also keeps people from feeling... I don't know.
Yes.
Like it's spammy, I guess.
Yes, yes. That's obviously why they did it. I think that many of these brands are so overwhelmed with what they're doing on Twitter and Facebook that they went and they grabbed their pages on Google Plus and they're trying to figure out what to do. I can't say I blame them, because if you have, like Starbucks has, 30 million people on Facebook who are following them, and they have several hundred thousand on Google Plus. Well, on the other hand, listen, it wasn't too long ago we thought that MySpace would control the world and that MySpace would be the operating system of the internet, right? I mean, oops.
I think they're not.
The corporations remembering that, to your point, Guy, the idea of it actually kind of reminds me of the Mitt Romney quote that corporations are people, and he got a lot of flack for that. But I think the point he was trying to make is, companies are made up of people and their personal experiences, and that's one way to look at that. On social media, I think that absolutely works. In a place like Twit, I mean, we're a company, but we're made up with people and we've got personalities, and we absolutely want that to shine through. It's not some sort of entity that has a barrier that people can't cross. And whether it's a small company of 20 or a huge company, I think the rules are somewhat the same.
Yeah, I really think they are the same. And if Leo hadn't smoked Michael Arrington, that was just like the high point of Twit for me. So I think that kind of stuff is good. Now, I'm not sure that, you'd want to see Starbucks get in a food fight with Pete's, but it would be interesting, actually.
Well, Microsoft seems to love doing that to Google. At least some of the folks from both sides have little public Twitter spats here and there.
Yeah, I like that.
It reminds you that there are people inside those big companies.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, guys. So do you have any insight into where Google Plus is heading, where they may, what do you think in terms of the direction that they're going? They're just going to try to keep building and releasing new functionality?
I don't have any inside scoop, but, reading the tea leaves, I would just say that, they're going to integrate it more and more into Google. A big leap forward was when they integrated a Google Plus post into social search results, right? That was really a telling day. And so I think Google Plus and Google pretty soon are going to be synonymous, and it'd be very difficult to separate the two. Right now, we tend to think of Google Plus as a silo, just like analytics or just like Gmail or something. But clearly, Vic and the team, they're trying to put everything together. That's why it's so hard to get a real number about how many people are using Google Plus, right? So I think it's going to be totally integrated. And these experts who say that, I'm going to sneak.
Oh, no, be careful sneezing on this show. There could be a montage any minute of you on YouTube.
What is with this show and people
sneeze? Makes everyone sneeze.
I don't know.
It's the sinus thing.
Yeah. So I think that at some point it's totally integrated. And these experts who say that Google Plus is a ghost town, if Google Plus were two guys in a garage with $100,000 in seed financing, yeah, I could see why you might hesitate. But Google Plus is Google. And, the other thing, the other way of looking at it, which sort of contradicts that, if you heard of a startup that after 7 months had, depending on which number you believe, between 25 and 100 million users, you would say, my God, that's the most successful social media startup ever. It's faster than Facebook. It's faster than MySpace. It's faster than Twitter. You know, where can I invest? Tell me the terms. Here's my money. Give me the wiring instructions. But then if you told them, oh, it's Google Plus, they say, ah, it's a ghost town. You know, I don't understand that. And this is like deja vu for me, because in the mid 80s, if you told someone, well, I know of a company that has 5% market share of this huge market, and everybody knows their brand, they would say, what company is that? Sounds like a great company. 5% of a huge number is a huge number. And if you said, well, it's Apple, they would say, ah, Apple's going to die. There's no way. So it's deja vu for me.
Guy, do you sit there and watch people buying your book? I mean, is it like the Amazon rankings? I'm really curious because I think of an ebook. I've thought before about possibly doing an ebook, and I just think I'd want to sit there and watch people buy. You know, I know it's only $3, but it adds up, right?
Well, you know, I do that a little bit. Luckily, Amazon recalculates only once an hour. If it was real time, it would be a problem. But really, what I watch more is I deploy the free copy via YouSendIt. And so YouSendIt, you can do something like set the time limit for the free download and the quantity of the free download, okay? And so I love to watch that counter go up as people download it. It's not money for me because it's free download, but it is fascinating when someone says, you know, here's a free download, and you know, you just watch that number climb.
That's amazing.
Very cool. So where can people get the book?
I bought the URL, the domain, whattheplus.com. So whattheplus.com is where to go. And I bought that link, that URL for $750. The guy who owned it did me a favor. I don't know why he had it, but he sold it to me for $700. Oh, it was $750. And I have to agree to meet with him to give him advice.
Now, do you bought this from this gentleman after Google Plus had already launched? So he knew that it was possibly a domain he could charge a lot more for?
I bought it about a month ago.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And so not only did he know about Google Plus, but if he was really following, because I've made no secret, I've been writing this book for 3 months, he would have known that my book name was What the Plus. So that's why I think he created it. Yes, he probably could have gotten more for it. But, you know, I'm a lucky guy. I mean, I bought garage.com for $2,500.
Wow. So you have, nice. you paid $750 and now you have to be like his mentor? That's part of the deal? He calls up and you have to say, all right, what's your problem? Let me give you some advice.
Well, he hasn't called yet, but I'd be happy to do that. I mean, I think it's good karma. I mean,
That's awesome.
He sold it to me for a very reasonable price. He did me a favor. There's no question. So, you know, as Amber knows, when people do me favors, I repay.
He does for a long time. So be careful if you do him any favors. No, I'm just kidding. So people can go there. Sorry, go ahead.
Lifetime supply of gloves.
Exactly. Mittens. Olympic mittens. People can go there and download the book and let you know what they think on Google Plus.
Yes. All right.
It's the first time I've seen Kindle iBook and Google Play. It sounds better than Android Market. That's for sure.
That's true.
Makes sense.
All right, yeah, gals.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. As always, always a pleasure to talk to you. And please come back to the Social Hour soon. And best of luck with What the Plus.
All right, thanks.
It'll be our next book.
And take care of your finger there.
Will do.
Bye, guy.
Bye.
Have a great week. Bye-bye. He is fun, Amber. I'm so glad that you're a friend of Guy's and you can say, you want to just come on the show? And he goes, yeah, sure.
It's always fun to have him on. You know, he's so down to earth and just absolutely hilarious too. He likes to tease and have a good time. So that's always fun too.
Absolutely. And it's sort of two things. It's kind of a relief to hear from somebody. Hey, I published an ebook. It's, it was easy. There are a lot of advantages to it. It's something that he, you know, recommends and has only good stuff to say about it. But also, realistically, listen, he's not necessarily saying that everyone should go out and think of ebooks as this next publishing platform that'll make everybody rich. There are a lot of variables that have to be in place, being able to get the word out, already having at least enough of a reputation for people to trust you. I mean, there are certain old school rules that still apply.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you're right. It is fascinating just to hear about the process, you know, from someone who's been doing this kind of the traditional way for so long, and just to see him dive into this new method of publishing and just going at it on his own. So hopefully it will be a big success for him. And I'm sure other people are kind of keeping an eye on what he's doing. And I got the book. I got one of the free downloads and I was reading through it. And I was surprised at how deep the information was. You know, it's not a flimsy little book in the sense that it's not light and fluffy. There's actually a lot of content. You know, it's a significant read and pretty much can teach anyone they want, anything they want to know about Google Plus.
That's awesome. Guy is definitely one of, I think, there are a lot of people who are sort of champions of Google Plus and the platform and do not think that it's a ghost town. Guy, I think, is one of the more vocal, the most vocal, at least on my radar. But it's like, I feel like there's a certain, you could read it as people being defensive, but I think there's a certain kind of passion that a lot of Google Plus fans share, and it's because they know that it is a good tool. It is a good community, and it's like, when people say it's a ghost town, it riles them up because they're like, no, there's so much to this. There's so many ways that you can make it work for you, and obviously What the Plus, Guy's book, is trying to define that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's also, set up almost as smaller little communities. You know, my circle on Google Plus, I have a circle of maybe 150 people, you know, my main kind of circle. So it's not this massive public community in terms of people coming there to connect. So I think Guy is right when he talks about those shared interests and those shared passions. You can create that really kind of niche oriented community on Google Plus that maybe you're not able to create on some of the other social networks just because the technology and the layout doesn't really lend itself to that. So I think that's where it becomes pretty interesting for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Well, it's always fun to have Guy on as a guest. We'll have him back when he writes another book, which shouldn't be long now.
A couple more months now, Sarah.
Exactly. Quick reminder for everybody who is not watching us live and would like to watch us live. It's fun to see everybody talking back to us in the chat room and watching on our stream. We do record on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. But if you can't watch us live or you want to ever go back and catch an episode that you missed or find a link that we might have talked about that you didn't write down, twit.tv/TSH is our show website. It's where all of our episodes live. Everything that Amber and I have talked about is there. Links to email us, our Google Voice number, that's all there too. On each episode page, we've got embedded video, so you can watch the show. But if you're more of an audio feed person, that's cool too. We've got video and audio feeds. If you're the kind of person who's always busy when we shoot on Mondays or just doesn't like to keep to a particular schedule, that's the whole beauty of Twit programming, is that we're on demand. You can subscribe to any of our shows and watch at your leisure. And we've got nice little Google Plus buttons there too, if you want to go ahead and like an episode and tell your friends. Again, that's twit.tv/TSH. And you can always email us if you've got questions, comments, or a little bit of feedback on some of the stuff that Guy Kawasaki was telling us about Google Plus. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, before we get into some of our news of the day, we want to quickly thank Audible.com. You knew that was coming. I mentioned Audible when we were talking to Guy because I actually, Guy Kawasaki is an author on Audible.com that you can search for by his name, and a bunch of his books come up. It's awesome. Anybody who's not familiar with Audible, let me tell you a little bit about it. Over 100,000 audiobook titles. That's a lot of books. Some periodicals, too, actually. The whole idea behind Audible is we all wish that we were reading books. Wouldn't it be nice to say you read a book a week or, you know, you finished 5 novels a month? Reading is great. You know, it expands your vocabulary. It helps your imagination. Books are awesome. You get to be parts of book clubs, and it can be kind of a really great a social investment to be able to talk about your favorite books with your friends. But reading books is very time-consuming, and a lot of us are busy. And at the end of the day, we either don't have time or we're too tired. So that's where audiobooks can come in, because you listen to the book while you're commuting or while you're at the gym or play it, you know, on your living room speakers while you're making dinner. There are so many ways that you can listen to audiobooks while you're getting other stuff done. And that's how you end up reading books for all those people who say, I don't have time. Yeah, if you search for Guy Kawasaki, I mean, his book right before What the Plus, Enchantment, which Amber and I talked to him about last year, is right here on Audible, narrated by Dan John Miller. Another book, The Art of the Start, narrated by Paul Bamer. Excuse me. And what's cool about audiobooks is that sometimes they're read by multiple voices, sometimes just one. So you always get a different experience. And the something about having a book read to you is a totally different way to digest the book. It kind of helps your imagination in different ways. So the deal with us is, if you're not already an Audible subscriber, we want to give you a free book. Audiblepodcast.com/socialhour is the URL to go to sign up for Audible and get a free book of your choice. Free book. It's like you stole it. You just stole it right out of the bookstore. But it's just a gift from us. Audiblepodcast.com/socialhour is the URL to use so that Audible knows you came through us. You can get your free book and start enjoying Audible content on your iPad or an Android device. There are so many different ways to digest audiobooks through Audible. And we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. I haven't talked about Audible in a while, so it's nice to see them back.
And if you're going to get a Guy Kawasaki book, I should say this book, it's one of his older ones, but The Art of the Start is one of his best books, in my opinion. But it looks like that's on Audible, too. So
yeah, it sure is.
It's a good first one.
Yeah, I love Audible because I'm one of those people who my eyes get really heavy at night and I never get anywhere with a novel. It's like I'm reading chapter 3 for 6 months now. I can't do it. So an audiobook when I'm driving to work, that's a lot more realistic for me. All right, let's move on to some startling numbers in the social media space. According to a recent Pew Research study, Twitter and Facebook, everyone always talks about, oh, you know, that's how I find out about news. Guy earlier in the show was saying that's how we learn if, you know, there was a big earthquake or something big happened. You know, we all rush to Twitter to find out the news in real time. According to this study, only 9% of adults polled are getting their news from Facebook and Twitter. Many more people are actually searching for topics on Google and other search engines. That accounts for about 32% of how people get their information. Direct news sites, if I want to go straight to the New York Times, for example, that's 36%. So it surprises me a little bit that our social media news sources are accounting for so little. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I guess particularly with Twitter, although when you think about it, really the average population, you know, the penetration to Twitter still isn't that high compared to something like Facebook. I don't know. I don't think the number really, for me, is as much of a shock, particularly with Facebook, because I feel like Facebook is the last place that I would go to for news about what's happening in the world today. I would go there just to basically read what's going on with my friends, but Twitter for sure would be the primary source for me to get news. And you know, sometimes I bypass looking on news sites altogether and just kind of read my, you know, list of all the people that I follow on Twitter and get some really great content. So 9 or 10%, I guess, not a huge surprise there, but I'm sure the numbers are just going to absolutely, you know, continue to increase a lot.
That's true. I mean, I guess a few years ago the numbers were zero because we didn't even have these sources of news. So it's a percentage of folks that are getting news from Twitter and Facebook where they didn't even have that option not long ago. I think it's also, I have noticed that when there's a big event, I'm trying to think of something that's, you know, a huge event that happened recently where I noticed all anybody was talking about was that on Twitter. You know, actually, I can think of a good example. When Steve Jobs passed away, for a while on Twitter, just because I follow people I have so many similar interests with, that's pretty much all anybody was posting about. And I went over to Facebook maybe, you know, 2 hours later just to sort of to compare and contrast. And it's like it wasn't even a top story on Facebook.
Yeah.
Not that people didn't care. It's either that maybe they hadn't heard about it yet or they're just talking about other things. And I thought, wow, this is two very different social networks right now just based on kind of breaking news and what people are talking about. But then again, I think it also illustrates that on Twitter, not everybody is using Twitter as a news source, because of course it's only a news source if you're following people who are helping to break news. If you know, if I'm just following, you know, six of my friends who are in my monthly potluck group and we're just sort of talking about what we're talking about and keeping it conversational, then obviously that's not a good news source.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Twitter, too, as far as a news source, is we've seen over the past couple of years how so many news organizations are currently depending on Twitter as one of the primary ways where they're sending out updates and breaking news. You know, oftentimes it will get out there first before it even makes it to the airwaves of their broadcaster. And of course, with print, it takes a whole lot longer. So Twitter has become like the perfect tool for them. And I think we're seeing news items really flow so quickly through that environment because it is such a public facing platform, unlike something like Facebook.
Yeah, I agree.
Very interesting.
Yep, social networking and news. There you have it.
There you have it. For our social media tip this week, this is something that Sarah and I have talked about before on the show, Facebook privacy. You know, we both have opinions on privacy on Facebook, how to maintain your network and keep on top of your privacy settings. There was a really good article just posted on Mashable. I particularly like the title because it says, Don't Tag Me, Bro, How to Control Facebook Photo Tags. But it's actually about more than just that. So we'll put a link in our show notes. And the gist of the article really is understanding how you can manage all of your tags on Facebook by simply going into your account settings, your privacy settings, and to the section called How Tags Work, and really understanding the five different categories within How Tags Work. And that's where you can really manage and control a lot of your privacy, so you can tell your friends if, you know, you want to be able to review photos before they're posted out there, before you're tagged in them. Also, you know, if you don't want people to be checking you in on Facebook, all of this is kind of like the heart of your privacy settings right within How Tags Work. So you can walk through the article on Facebook and lots of really helpful information for anyone concerned about privacy.
Absolutely. And, you know, a friend of mine recently, he actually, I think he took to Twitter with the question, which was kind of funny. Chad, I don't know if you can pull up my screen, but he said, "What the heck is going on with Facebook photos? I can no longer untag myself." So this is a picture of me and Tom that Trey Ratcliffe actually took. I like this picture, but let's say that I didn't. The way that an easy way to untag yourself, because I haven't set my preferences to make me have to, you know, say yes beforehand. People can tag me and then I'll go ahead and untag myself. But up here in this almost invisible little gear guy next to my close button is my drop-down menu where I've got a bunch of options to add location, change the date if there was a date associated, download, make it my profile picture, or actually, that's weird. It should have an option to remove tag. Oh, maybe I didn't. Maybe I'm not actually. Oh, that's what it is. See, I tagged the. I actually added this, so I didn't even tag myself. Hold on a second. I'm going to give you a better description here.
It is okay. A nice picture, though, Sarah.
It's a nice picture, yeah. So this is a different picture of me and some friends at the Crunchies a couple months ago. In this area, if I wanted to report or remove tag, that's where your option is now. Now, if I wanted to report it as, I don't know, something that's inappropriate or that sort of thing, this is how I would do that. I don't actually want to remove this tag, so this is as far as I'll go. But you have the option to remove the tag for a variety of reasons. You know, it's offensive or it's spammy or it's not me, or just I just want to remove it because I don't want it to show up in pictures that people might search for. But those are the sorts of things where I know that Facebook has more options than ever for you to control how people experience your information, but it's not always totally obvious. So if anyone was wondering, that's how you do it.
Good place to dive into it. All right. For our social media spotlight, Sarah, I'm not sure if you've seen this site before. But I know it's been out since last year. I just stumbled across it today. I can't even remember how I found it. I'm always looking for new sites that talk about internet life and social media news. And I was really pleasantly surprised to find the Daily Dot. This is like, I think they call themselves the internet, the internet's community newspaper. Of course, it's in online form, and lots of great articles on this site that have to do with social media. Again, just a nice roundup. I know they have a bunch of different editors that kind of scour through all of the different internet news that is out there. So it's just daily.com, and you know, a great resource if you want to know the latest on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and other internet-friendly stories.
Yeah, I'm actually familiar with the Daily Dot because a friend of mine, Owen Thomas, who used to write for Gawker, is the editor over at Daily Dot.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so he's, you know, so I knew about Daily Dot as soon as he started working there. And it was interesting because it's fairly new. It's less than a year old. What's interesting about them is he was pretty vocal about it, obviously, on his various social networks about why it wasn't just another tech news site. They're much more, and I think it took me a little while reading it to sort of say, oh yeah, Daily Dot is different than, you know, a TechCrunch or a Mashable, mm-hmm. because it's less how-to and less kind of insider industry money-focused and much more human interest-focused. And that doesn't mean it's soft. It's just they seem to have a different spin, much more personality-driven. You know, a story about Facebook would be more, you know, a specific story about how George Clooney used Facebook. I'm looking at a picture of George Clooney now, so that's who came to mind. And it's kind of hard to describe, but you definitely do notice it when you start to poke around the site a bit, that it's a refreshing different take.
Yeah, it is a different take. So, you know, a nice option for someone who wants to kind of get outside of maybe the Mashable world. You know, we get so stuck in going to the same news sites all the time when we're interested in social media and internet news. So this is a great alternative. I've enjoyed just kind of scanning through it to find those stories, like you said, Sarah, that have that more human element to them. And, you know, it's not necessarily about branding, but it is about people. So that type of content exists on Daily Dot. So that is our spotlight for this week.
Yep, daily.com. It's a good one. You know, I noticed, it was even earlier this morning, that somebody is using their Facebook timeline, a brand, we talked about brands earlier in the show, really well. Not Google Plus, although they might be on Google Plus too, but it's on Facebook. It's the Sierra Club. Anybody who's familiar with the Sierra Club, obviously, environmental activism and conservation group, you know, started by John Muir way back when. And the Sierra Club has a lot of fans on Facebook, but what they've done with their Facebook timeline, because the timeline is very date-based, Chad, if you like, click way back to 1800, you can see the, can you see the dates over, do you have to be logged in? Maybe I could pull it up on mine. Facebook.com/Sierra Club. You got it. Yeah, so this is actually something that the New York Times had done. If you click on Founded, way down at the bottom there, there you go. Founded in 1892. The New York Times had had done this where they really filled in their timeline in a cool way. This is something we talked about on Tech News Today a little while ago, Amber. I'm not sure if we ever touched on it here on the Social Hour, but the whole idea behind the timeline is the lifetime of a person or a thing. Obviously, on Facebook, if you're honest about your birth date, that's your first date in your timeline. Is, you know, mine is 1976. That's the year that I was born. And then you jump into, you know, 2005 when I got on Facebook for the first time, type of a thing. But that's sort of the idea, is that people can quickly search the lifetime of a Facebook account. Something like the Sierra Club, which was obviously founded a very long time ago, is they can be creative about how they fill in that information. Obviously, John Muir is no longer with us, but there's a illustration of him that can be uploaded by whoever's administrating the Sierra Club page. And it's just kind of cool. I mean, I wouldn't even say trivia. It's like, it's just an interesting look back at the company. You can click into any decade, and then some photos and some information and what happened starts to propagate. So kudos to them for putting in the effort to make their page a place that people would want to hang out in for a while and learn more.
Yeah, that's very cool. I mean, it's great to get the historical view of a company. I mean, we're so often used to maybe going to Wikipedia to get that information. Mm-hmm. So to be able to see this in such a beautiful visual format, it's really, really nice.
Yeah, it's really cool. So that's Facebook.com/Sierra Club. It's a very good example of a brand using the Facebook platform in a cool way.
Love it. All right, Sarah, now we have our feedback, which we also love.
Yes.
Love getting your emails and your phone calls and your videos when you're safe. This first email, do you want me to take this one, Sarah?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
I'm not sure who it's from, if I can't.
It's actually from the Buffer folks. We had them on the show whenever that was. I know we were in this studio, so it had to have been less than a year ago. But the Buffer,
is it Leo is his name?
Yeah,
maybe?
Leo and is it Chris? Oh gosh, I don't know. His name is escaping me, but it's co-founders. We had them both on the show. And Buffer is the great service that helps you schedule tweets. If you're the kind of person who's got a lot to say, but you don't want to inundate people when you've got one free hour during the day, that sort of thing.
Okay, cool. All right. So I will read the email. I want to tell you about the brand new version of DigDig, a WordPress sharing buttons plugin we've recently acquired. Add a beautiful floating bar to your blog posts, just like Mashable has. Display sharing buttons easily before or after your articles, and add the newest buttons such as Pinterest and Buffer buttons to your site. And it looks like you can get it to here. Get that at BufferApp.com/DigDig. It has nothing to do with Dig, right, Sarah?
It doesn't. And I'm surprised that Dig, as in dig.com, doesn't have a problem with this, because it's DigDig spelled with two G's.
I know. That's why I found it kind of surprising.
I guess the word dig, when you think of it on the internet, is so, you know, we just start spelling it with two G's or something. I assume that, let's just say that dig.com has no issue with this. They're two different properties. What's cool about this is I've always sort of wondered how so many folks had that little floating bar that a site like Mashable has, where even though you scroll down, you know, under the fold when you're reading a variety of articles, you've still got those little helpful, do you want to tweet this? Do you want to send this to Facebook or Google Plus? Little floating bar that never really goes away. You never scroll past it. So if for anybody who's using WordPress, this is a great way to add these helpful social media buttons to any post.
Very cool. And it's neat that it includes, you know, newer social networks like Pinterest, for example. Handy for a lot of people who are starting to depend on that social network.
Yes, absolutely. So thanks to the folks at Buffer. It sounds like DigDig was a plugin, a WordPress plugin. Joel, by the way, Joel and Leo. Sorry, Joel. I don't know why I thought your name was Chris. Joel and Leo of Buffer. sounds like it was a tool that they took under their wing and are going to continue developing it, adding a Pinterest button, for example. Obviously, just a few months ago, nobody needed one of those. Now people want to share things on Pinterest. So kudos to them for branching out and expanding the Buffer brand.
Very cool. All right, Sarah, we had so much fun last week when we were talking about meme of the week. I've decided to use that again instead of tweet of the week, but we'll get back to the tweet eventually when there's something worth talking about. However, the meme of the week for this week has to be a McDonald's social media fiasco. Once again, they have screwed up in the social world this time around. The problem was they tried to create a meme, and that can never be a good thing. It's like trying to create a viral video. It never goes over so well. They came up with a hashtag shamrocking. They were introducing their new it's a green milkshake in honor of St. Patty's Day. They wanted people to shoot videos of themselves dancing with their green milkshake, and that would be called shamrocking. Some people did that. However, others decided to take the concept of shamrocking and use it in a different way. And just like the earlier social media disaster that McDonald's had, I guess, in January about McDonald's stories. This time around, people like to poke fun at McDonald's and use shamrocking in ways that aren't necessarily beneficial to the McDonald's brand. So a big story again. I don't know what McDonald's should do. I think it's hard for them in the social space. I mean, they're, to me at least, they're not the most beloved brand in the world, in the sense that their food doesn't exactly personify things that I think the online community cares about. And that's a huge generalization, but I'm sure you know what I mean, Sarah.
Yeah, I mean, I would never pretend to be a McDonald's fan. I know there are a lot of people out there that like McDonald's. So, hey, you know, to each their own. But without even, this story is somewhat new to me, Amber, because I do try to keep McDonald's out of my life as much as possible. The idea that McDonald's has a green milkshake and is asking people to upload videos about their love for this shamrock shake is just asking for trouble. I mean, how is anybody going to take this experiment seriously and give McDonald's the kind of material that they're looking for? You know, you're not going to get people say, I really love it. It's so good. Oh, it's really so refreshing on St. Patrick's Day. It's like, no, you're going to get a lot of people making fun of you. Because you're a big brand and you've got a green milkshake.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, I think that's the issue. You know, you look at McDonald's and you look at how they've been the center of controversy for in many documentaries, for example, on the food industry and how they make their food, everything from chicken nuggets and the list of things goes on and on. So, this, like I said, I think the social space is very, very hard for them, and rightfully so, in the sense that people are critical of brands in the social space many times. And this is no exception.
Yeah, exactly. For all of those of you in the chat room saying, oh, we won't be able to have McDonald's as a sponsor now, I don't think we needed to worry about that. McDonald's isn't exactly, you know, knocking down Twit's door, at least not yet. And if you know what, if they do, I will try to love one of their salads. There's just nothing I can eat at McDonald's. That's why I don't like McDonald's. They don't really have the kind of food that I like. Although, Amber, I will say that I do have some friends who talk about how good these shamrock shakes are. So maybe they're not uploading videos, but they are catching on, at least in some circles.
Yeah, and I mean, they could be good, just, you know, what's in them.
That's,
you know, there's a lot of good things. I also like to eat chocolate bars. Nonetheless, I choose not to, because there are repercussions to be eating chocolate bars for days on end. The same may apply to a green milkshake. But I don't know. You know what I should say to you with McDonald's, Sarah? They have cleaned up their act in some respects, and they are trying to introduce healthier things, and they've gone to the McCafe style of restaurants, and they're making small little improvements. But I don't think it's going to be anytime soon where they you know, get off scot-free in the social media world. They have a lot to supposedly, I think, learn about how to interact and how to try to force these memes upon people.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. It seems very forced. It's like, it's not as if you're a large brand and you're trying to, I don't know, put a modern spin on the company, that you shouldn't, that social media isn't a place for you. It's that sort of, oh, McDonald's, this is so forced. You know, I'm going to try to, you know, hack this competition of yours. That's the sort of thing that I think people can really pick up on when brands just get it wrong. You know, you sort of wonder, well, who are their social media experts? I'd love to know. I mean, in all honesty, I'd love to talk to the McDonald's social people because I'm sure they have a lot of good ideas. But again, you're talking about a, you know, an older brand, and it doesn't always work. We try to bring it into 2012.
And look at what's happening on the web today. You know, one of the big trends for 2012 in social media definitely is social media for social good in the social media space. We've seen brands like Chipotle, the fast food Mexican chain, go off and create that amazing video called Back to the Start with Willie Nelson supporting sustainable farming. You know, these are the type of things that work really well in the social space. These are the type of things I think that, you know, a younger generation, a generation that is digitally savvy, that they care about, right? So, you know, more of that kind of stuff from McDonald's might work. You know, you have Chipotle, you know, talking about getting back to the farm and getting buying local foods. And then you have people dancing around drinking green milkshakes and doing a leprechaun dances. Like, are they, you know, I don't know which one's going to appeal to a smart social audience.
Yeah. You know, that Chipotle commercial is one of, I mean, it's a very good, it's well done. You know, the song is great. You know, Willie Nelson obviously has such an iconic voice. For anybody who's unfamiliar, it's on YouTube. It's the Chipotle. I don't know. I guess if you just search for Chipotle, it would probably come right up. But that commercial is such a good example and a rare one of a company with a well-known brand putting out something where I remember, because you don't know who the brand is until the very end. And it's kind of a long, you know, 2 minute or so song and video. And at the end, it's sort of like, wow, really? Huh. You know, instead of saying, oh, gosh, McDonald's is behind this, please. You know, I actually sat there thinking, I wonder what Chipotle is doing differently, because they really kind of got me. They made me sit up and listen. I felt that it was authentic.
I agree. I totally agree.
Not, but, you know, to what extent, not exactly sure, but definitely got the point across.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
All right. So quickly before Amber's Rat or Fat, I want to remind you guys how you can get a hold of us, because we love all of your questions and your comments and your feedback. They help make our show better. So the social hour at twit.tv is how you can email us. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626-SOCIAL. Or you can always record a video. And you know what? We haven't gotten any videos in a while. So anybody who's out there, please send us a video, because we'd like to see your face smiling back at us, or frowning, or just,
or just
ambivalent. That's fine too. But anything, if you're feeling brave, record yourself asking a question or a tip. What's your favorite social media site? Any of that stuff, we'll take it. Just upload it somewhere and send us the link. No downloads, please. All right, Amber. Time for Rad or Fad.
All right, Rad or Fad. So this one is from Daily Dot, our social spotlight for the week. I stumbled across an article on Daily Dot about a magazine called Pinned Monthly. The idea being that Pinned Monthly, it's actually a website, but they are producing a magazine, an actual print magazine. They're hoping to cash in on the popularity of Pinterest, of course, and all the wonderful images that are shared and presented there. Now, the magazine is a little bit costly. It looks like they're charging about $89 for the actual print version. You can get a digital version for $29. Now, the proceeds will be donated to Room to Read, Reed's Girls Education Program. Don't know a lot about that, but that sounds like a good thing. However, at first when I read this, Sarah, I thought, is this a joke? And I'm still not 100% sure, in the sense that Pinterest in print form just seems to me to be, a really long-winded way to get that content into people's hands when it's so easy to access on the web.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this either, especially since some of it isn't, I mean, it doesn't seem like the cheapest thing in the world. Is it a joke? No. It's probably, I guess there are so many people on Pinterest. I was about to say women, and then I caught myself, because I know it's not just women, although there's a high level of, you know, engaged women on Pinterest. A lot of people who share stuff that is so artistic and, you know, for example, if you were remodeling your living room, it's like every once in a while I'll stumble onto somebody's Pinterest folder for like a redecorating project, and it's like, wow, this is really cool. I mean, there's a lot of like visually spectacular things to look at. I guess in that form, that could be cool. I know that once somebody gave me a photo book. You know, it was something that you could just print through iPhoto of just a bunch of, it was like a memory type thing. And I mean, I loved that. It was such a nice gift, because it was just all these photos that were digital photos that I usually don't see printed anywhere. So in that sense, that could be, I mean, if there was something on Pinterest that really, really appealed to you in a coffee table book way, I guess it would work. I don't think it's for me, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess the good thing is that they are giving people credit who share their photos on Pinterest. So they are making sure to get approval on putting those photos into print. You know, the digital magazine seems much more attractive to me than the actual print magazine. So I don't know. I have to put it in the category kind of fad. I mean, I hope they do well with the on the digital side. But I just think on the printed side, it's just, I don't know. It seems a little dated to be putting some of this stuff into print.
Yeah. And almost like you're appealing to people who Pinterest is the whole point of Pinterest is like, hey, it's sort of a social scrapbooking type of a thing, but it's so much easier because you're doing it online and it's all the modern tools that we all have now that we didn't used to have. So you don't have to pin stuff on a corkboard anymore. So printing into actual print does seem a little backward thinking, but hey, who am I to judge? There are probably a lot of people on Pinterest who love this idea. And if you do, let us know why we are crazy. You know, Amber, we usually just have one ratter fad, but since I knew that you were going to talk about something Pinterest related today, we did get an email from Andy who said that he knows we're both into Instagram, and we've talked a lot about Pinterest lately, which is true. His friend has a daily newsletter, and in the latest edition, his friend turned Andy on to a mashup called Pingram. So it's Instagram and Pinterest together. What it does is it takes your Instagram account and makes everything visible in a Pinterest-style layout, which is great if you're not completely bored of that design concept already, says Andy. I like this. This is actually my account. I went ahead and created one. So the deal is that this is actually not Pinterest at all, even though it looks like Pinterest. This is just my Instagram account. However, it's in Pinterest format, and I do have a handy-dandy way to share something to Pinterest itself. If for some reason that picture I took of Austin, Texas, I thought would be, great in my cityscapes folder or whatever, something on Pinterest that I thought people would get out of it, I could go ahead and share it that way. I really like this. I think that Pingram is certainly not the first Instagram alternative. There are a lot of these. Because Instagram doesn't really have its own web-based layout that is awesome yet. They just have permalinks for photos. That was us playing Dance Central. That was a fun day. This is cool. If you indeed have not gotten enough of Pinterest yet, Pingram. Pingram.me is the
I love it.
The URL. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It is very cool.
And totally very easy cool. to set up your account.
That's not the attack cat, Sarah, is it?
No, those are my cats. Neither of my cats bit me. It was a friend's kitty who I'm sure feels very bad about it. I will try to meet him again when I have some armor.
Movement
on.
In your finger?
Yeah, I'll go meet Oscar the cat someday when I've got like big gardening gloves on, and I'll also stay 20 feet away from him.
Wow.
Yeah. Good stuff. Never thought I'd be afraid of a cat, but hey.
There's a first for everything, Sarah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's we've got Pinterest on paper and then Pingram.me if for some reason you want Instagram to feel more like Pinterest.
We pretty much have everything covered now, Sarah.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty rad, the Pingram thing. I'm going to try that.
Yeah. So we've got a Radder Fed Plus today. So that is the end of our show, Amber. I think we're just right about on 1 hour now. And since we're the Social Hour, we try to stick to 60 minutes of social goodness. And that is it for us. But we will be back next Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Same time, same place with Amber and me. And I don't know if we're going to have a guest or not. It's a mystery. We'll have to figure that out between now and then.
We'll see what happens this week, Sarah. Maybe there is something that will warrant an amazing guest. Oh, yes. I'm still trying to get Zay Frank, but I don't know what's going on. I haven't heard anything, so I'll keep harassing him.
Please do. Please keep harassing him.
Too much success on Kickstarter, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, I have a feeling we're not the only people knocking on his door asking to hear more about his fun show coming up.
Yeah.
But hopefully he'll answer us. And also, I already asked him, Kevin Rose, because obviously he has a very sort of vague and intriguing new position at Google. I asked him to be on our show on Friday before I knew he was going to Google. I just knew that Oink was shutting down, and he was very vague about why he couldn't. And now he's not answering my calls about today, so I will keep trying because I want to know more.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I would love to know more, too.
Okay, cool. All right, well, until next week, have a great week, all. Thanks for joining us on The Social Hour, and we'll see you on the next episode, episode 53. Bye.
See you soon. Bye.